J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
How's your home, family? How's your home, family? How's your home, family? How is your whole family? How's your home?
How's your home,
family? How's your home?
How's your home,
family? How's your home?
How's your home,
family?
How is your whole family?
How's your dick?
How's your dick?
Tation machine.
How is your dictation machine?
Take your pants down.
How?
To the cleaners today. Take your pants down.
How?
To the cleaners today. Take your pants down.
How?
To the cleaners today.
Take your pants down to the cleaners today.
Won't you do my ass?
Won't you do his ass?
Trilogical chart, won't you my ass?
Come on, baby, won't you do his ass?
Trilogical chart, won't you do my ass?
Won't you do his ass?
Trilogical chart,
won't you do my astrological chart?
How's your home?
How's your home?
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
In the mode for a podcast? Good, because I got one. How you doing? It's the 12th of May, 2021. I'm JC, and you're at jconline.com, but you already know that. Every once in a while, I get thrown in Facebook jail. I'm not in Facebook jail now, but I've been there before. I think a lot of us have been. And, boy, they don't really like nudity. You get any nudity in there, man, oh, man. I accidentally posted some nudity once. Honest to God, it was an Easter basket. And this woman with very large breasts had drawn, painted, I guess you would say, bunny ears on her breasts and then had them sitting in an Easter basket. And I didn't notice that there was actually some nipple that was visible. And I posted that because I thought it was funny. And I got thrown in Facebook jail for a month for nudity. And I was like, I didn't even realize it was nudity. It was my fault. I probably should have looked a little closer. But I will say that the times that I've been in Facebook jail, and I've been in maybe three or four times, some of the happiest days of my life. And it really does make you wonder about this, I call it anti-social media, actually. And you're sitting there, and for those few weeks, you're like, well, I saw this thing, I wish I could post it, or I wish I could put this picture up or something like that. But then, you know, that feeling goes away pretty quickly. And you are left with this, I wouldn't call it euphoria, but you're just happier. That's all there is to it. And it makes you think when you come back on, because you dive right back in, you start posting stuff left and right. Well, this is one of those times where I say to myself, I'm not sure what the point of all of this is. Let me tell the story in reverse. So yesterday afternoon, we're listening to the news, and I even say to my wife, you know, it's starting to look like the Republicans might be right about this whole thing with the extra money. Because Parson, the governor of the state of Missouri, yesterday wiped out the additional unemployment benefit, the extra $300, because he said people, and this is sort of the mantra of the Republicans right now, as you know, that the government's given people all this money, and it is taking away their incentive to go look for a job. So we're having this discussion yesterday, and not more than an hour later, a story surfaces on the Huffington Post, I think it was, that says that the economists, the experts in this whole thing, are saying that's not the reason why this is happening. I go to a Dunkin' Donuts with my daughter almost every morning as I'm driving her to school. And the last couple of days we've gone in there and the door is locked and they're like drive through only. So the manager was actually working the window yesterday. I said, what's the deal? How come you have the inside closed? He said, we can't find any workers. We can't find anybody to work inside the place. And then also, you know, you talk to small business owners like that, and they say the employees that they do have usually are robbing them blind. So all they're able to do right now is run the drive-through window. So as I was saying, this story surfaces maybe an hour after I'm having this conversation with my wife yesterday, and the economists come along and they go, well, what happens is the hiring for a lot of these kinds of jobs, these hourly jobs and stuff, these jobs are filled, they have a tendency to be filled, using networks, friends and relatives of people who are already working there. And the problem is that all of those people have been separated because of the pandemic, which means those networks are broken up. He also said a lot of the employers may be reluctant to pay the market clearing wage, which is defined as the pay necessary to attract workers to all of the available work. He's saying some of these guys are going to have to raise the wage, and especially when school gets out, because now you have a lot of people who don't have childcare, and if you got a 5 or a 6 or a 7-year-old at home, you can't be working and just leave a 7-year-old at home. So it's going to get worse before it gets better. And back to that wage again, the National Restaurant Association, an industry lobbying group, says there's a lot of different factors, but they say that it's not worth the risk. People are saying it's not worth the risk to go work in a restaurant because now not only would you then be back in the workforce, but now you are risking your health by having lots of interaction with people that you wouldn't normally have interaction with. And people are going, $11 an hour? In a situation where I would have a much higher percentage probability of contracting COVID, it's not worth it. But the idea that, you know, just because the federal government is giving you that extra $300, actually, it's not the federal government, it's the state governments, because as we said, Parson wiped Missouri's out yesterday. But they're just basically saying it's not what you think it is. And that's not my opinion. That's the economists, that's the experts in this whole thing. You believe whatever you want. But let me come full circle now and tell you why I was doing that story in the first place. So yesterday afternoon, I post that story from the Huffington Post that explains this whole thing that I just explained to you here right now. And people are commenting below it going, well, people are getting so much unemployment money, they're not going to go look for a job. You know what that means? That means that people posted stuff, commentary on the story, without even having read the story, because they're posting the exact opposite of what the story says. So what does that mean? They're not reading the story. This is where we are in this country right now. We make up our minds on an issue, and then we go and look for stories to substantiate our position, our view, our opinion on something. And even when I post a story, it's like, oh, well, look at this. Here's an explanation by a group of experts who should know this stuff backwards and forwards, and people are commenting without even reading it. And I finally called them out on it, too. I was like, you guys, I can tell from your commentary here in the comment section, you're not even reading this. It's the exact opposite of what I just told you. Anti-social media. One of the things you're going to notice on this version of the podcast, we've tried this a couple of other times a couple of years ago doing podcasts, but one of the things that you may notice is that we're not necessarily always going to be talking exclusively about St. Louis and the Midwest, because our diagnostics indicate that we have a lot of people listening all over the country, and a lot of them are transplants, and they still care about the Cardinals and stuff like that. But we do have people spread around all over the place, and they're not necessarily specifically interested in what is going on in St. Louis, and so we sort of want to acknowledge their existence, too. And that having been said, the Cardinals, the St. Louis Cardinals, had a great game. Cardinals are playing great baseball right now, and I mean really good baseball. Carlos Martinez, who has been an ass clown for the entire time he's been in St. Louis. And again, here's a guy with all of the talent and ability in the world. One of the most, there's a, if you're not a big baseball fan, you may not be familiar with the term a live arm, a live arm. And that means a pitcher has a motion, a delivery, a follow through, whatever it is that is making his pitches not just move, but move a lot. And this, of course, is Carlos Martinez. The guy has a terrific live arm. But he's, what's the word I'm looking for? Goofy. That's it. Goofy. And just recently, he has been experiencing and demonstrating, I guess for all of us, that he really can pitch after all when he puts his mind to it. And he's had a couple of very good performances, or at least better than what we are accustomed to, where, you know, it's 7-0 after two innings because he's walking guys and hitting guys and can't find the strike zone and stuff like that. You know, this has been very, very gratifying for Cardinal Nation to watch this guy seemingly finally mature, finally come around and demonstrate that he can play this game. Well, he's injured right now because after one of those exuberant home run celebrations, the players jump up and down on the field and he twisted an ankle. We don't know how how long he's going to be out. All right, delving into the archives, we find that it is the anniversary of something we did in 1989. And if you were around then, you may recall there was a bit of a gas shortage. And so what we did is at that gas station just north of 40 on Lindbergh, which was right down the street from the radio station, we took our wireless mics, we bought out something like, well, I think the frequency of the radio station was 93.7, so I think we bought something like $9,370 worth of gas, and all you had to do is be listening to the radio station, pull in, and you got free gas. We put people in a very, very good mood. The only problem was is that traffic was backing up on Lindbergh. It was causing a traffic problem, and people were actually on the shoulder of Highway 40 waiting to make the turn northbound onto Lindbergh to come up and get some free gas. This raised the ire of KMOX helicopter traffic man Don Miller, who was trashing us on the air on the KMOX traffic reports. Only a few weeks later, when traffic was backed up on Highway 40 because of the KMOX balloon race, somehow those drivers were being really entertained, his words, not mine, really entertained by the balloons that were flying around over Highway 40. Moral of the story, if we do it, it's bad. If they do it, it's good. Anniversary number two, the year 1995, and I exited a radio station called The River. And again, this is one of those deals where you sign a two-year contract and they make you lots of promises. And you get there and none of the promises come true. None of them are realized. You can't make the kind of money you are hoping to make. The contract is up. You look at them. They look at you. You decide, what's the point of this? And so you say, let's go our separate ways, which is what I did. Of course, the television stations and the newspapers report that J.C. Corcoran was fired again. It was not fired. The contract was up. We decided to go our separate ways. It was on this date, 1995. You know, when you're working for somebody who's got a wife and kids in California, but you know he's boinking the midday girl and that he is basically letting the midday girl run the radio station in exchange for blowjobs, you're going to have a problem. You come into work, you look at your music sheet, and on Two for Tuesday, I'm playing twofers by a band called The Swinging Stakes, a twofer by a woman named Michelle Schacht. And there's no better way to get hundreds of thousands of listeners to glom onto your radio station every morning. Nothing more effective than playing two songs in a row by Michelle Schacht and The Swinging Stakes. It was time to go. It was time to leave the radio station. I fulfilled my end of the contract. I gave him my 2 years. We went our separate ways. But no, J.C. Corcoran was fired again. This is kind of crap. It's been going on for 37 years now. And our final anniversary today is 1986. It was a Monday night, and you might remember it as the Monday Night Miracle.
6 seconds to go. The crowd bringing hockey back to St. Louis from the days of the late 60s, early 70s. And Jacques Plante, Glenn Hall, Doug Harvey. What a night for the Blues. They've tied this series at two victories aside.
23 seconds left in the two-man advantage for St. Louis. They trail 4-1. Third period. Natras, the save! A skate save by Vernon on Natras. Wickenheiser, the shot! He scores! It's 4-2! Getting hemmed in their own zone again. Peplinski centers to Mullen. He shoots and scores. And you could see that one coming. Natras playing it to Gilmore. On to Pazlowski. A shot kicked out. Rebound. Center shoots and scores. There are 8 minutes remaining in the third period and maybe in the hockey season for the St. Louis Blues. And Gilmore deflects the puck in. Sutter into the corner. Centers. They score. Pazlowski, and they'll go crazy. The St. Louis Blues have been in this game what they have been all season and throughout the playoffs. An underdog. They've called this club a lunch bucket team. They're blue-collar hard workers. They don't have the talent of other teams. They know it. Boy, you get the idea. If the Blues can come up with a miracle finish, these Calgary Flames would have to crawl back to Alberta. 1:17 to go. The Blues need a goal to continue on. 1:10 remaining. A shot, they score! Pazlowski! The Blues, a remarkable comeback. And this sixth game unbelievably goes to overtime. Here's a drive, McInnes wide, and Walmsley has the puck come right in front off the boards. Bernie Federko spun around. Here's Wickenheiser shooting, and Vernon the big save. Calgary can end it if they win it. Here they come. McCowan to Mullen. Mullen shot. Hits the goal post. He hit the post, and Walmsley makes another save. Here's Ramage for Federko. Too far. Federko steals the puck from Reinhardt. Over to Hunter, who shoots block. Wickenheiser scores. Doug Wickenheiser.
May 12th, 1986. If you were around then, you remember where you were, who you were with, what you were doing. I've told this story before. Doug was my neighbor when I was living in Baldwin. We became pretty good friends. Losing him and losing him the way we did is just one of those things that still angers me, actually. All the bad stuff happens to really, really good people. More sports. The trainer of Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit is now admitting that the horse was treated with an antifungal cream containing the steroid that he tested positive for. This is the fourth different story I've heard on this right now. And this ain't going to end well. I've been on the side of Colin Kaepernick throughout this whole ordeal, but he's publishing a book that calls for the abolition of the police. Colin? You may have lost me there. Betty White. What's Betty White doing at 99? Well, if that question has been keeping you awake at night, you'll be happy to know that Betty White's rep says she has been keeping herself busy during the pandemic by reading, watching TV, and doing crossword puzzles. She's been kind of lonely, but she does get regular visits from some ducks that live on her property. Birthdays today. This is unfair. It's totally unfair. Rami Malek does a great job portraying Freddie Mercury in the movie Bohemian Rhapsody, wins the Oscar for Best Actor. He's 40 years old today. But then another guy comes along, does the Elton John story in Rocket Man, but he does all the actual singing, whereas Rami Malek was just lip syncing, and this guy gets nothing. We got a nomination. That was it. Rami Malek, 40 today. Malin Ackerman likes to take her shirt off. 43. Thank God for her. Emilio Estevez, son of Martin Sheen, brother of Charlie Sheen, 59 today. Ving Rhames. Oh, I love this guy because he's got great range. He plays one of the most terrifying characters ever in Pulp Fiction, but he can also play the Secret Service agent with a big heart in the movie Dave with Kevin Kline. Ving Rhames, 62 today. If you're like, what the hell sort of name is Ving? Well, it's just the other half of Irving. He didn't want to be called Irv, so it came back Ving. See, this is something that happened. The first time I think I can remember this happening is you got Topher Grace. What
the hell sort of name is Topher? Well, it's the second half of Christopher. So up until then, if your name was Christopher and you wanted a shortened version of that, people called you Chris. But now you can just use the second half of your name, just like Ving Rhames, Irving, not Irv, Ving. If your name is George, you just can't come along one day and say, just drop the G part. I want to be called Orge. Can't do that. Would have been George Carlin's birthday today. He was born in 37. Would have been Yogi Berra's birthday today. He was born in 1925. The people still living and breathing include Gabriel Byrne, 71. Billy Squier is 71 today. Steve Winwood, 73. Burt Bacharach, 93. 50 years ago today, 1971, Mick and Bianca Jagger were married, divorced in 80. They had one child. Yeah, Jagger's got seven children with four different women. And it was 43 years ago today, 1978, the Commerce Department caved to feminists and said hurricanes would no longer be named exclusively after women. And now this.
And now in a desperate attempt to fill 24 hours of programming, here's some bullish that happened somewhere today. We've got some footage here of the bullish, which began just after 3 o'clock this afternoon when residents in this neighborhood were shocked to see this fairly common thing happening. An attractive witness described the event in breathless terms.
I went to my window and I was like, whoa, there's some bullish happening.
That happened right over there. I'm an older man, so you can trust what I say.
Authorities in special uniforms rushed to the scene to stand around while our cameras filmed them. Our reporter Keith Collins joins us now live from the scene of the bullshit through the use of expensive technology. Good to be with you again, Keith. We have a colorful graphic here that shows instances of bullshit like this are on the rise. Is that right?
Yes, although why is unclear. Some say it's because of one fucking reason. Others say it's because of some other fucking reason. I talked to this random expert on the subject who told me this thing you're about to hear him say right after he points at a piece of paper.
I spent my entire life attending the nation's most prestigious schools to talk about bullshit like this. I'm really just happy to be on TV.
Now let's see if we can drag this out a little longer by showing emails written by some of our viewers. I once saw some stuff kind of like the shit you're talking about happen. I have nothing more to add. Another person says, I am angry that things like this happen. I get mad about every bullshit thing I see. So obviously a lot of opinions there to make this story seem somewhat meaningful.
Oh, absolutely, Glenn. This bullshit has some broader implications. Here's a list of tips on how to avoid bullshit happening to you.
And here's some footage of Congress.
Yes, I see that.
Well, thank you, Keith. Let us know if there are any updates on this bullshit story from there.
There's no way there will be.
Very good. We'll check back with you in an hour anyway.
I'm just some fucking guy.
When we return, we'll look at live footage of a car chase taken from a helicopter and free associate about what's going on.
It's funny because it's not far off, right? All right, today we're bringing you our conversation back in 2001 with chef extraordinaire Emeril Lagasse. We learned a lot of stuff. We learned that he's a lot of fun. We pretty much had a good idea that that was going to be the case. But it turns out he's got friends in rock and roll, friends throughout the show business and entertainment community. He was a blast to have on, and so our JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day with Chef Emeril Lagasse.
Play this because we have a special intro for Emeril because the co-star of the show on NBC, Robert Urich, was on the air with us about 10 days ago. Hit it, Sharpie.
Robert Urich, brand new show. So you get Emeril, and Emeril cooks for the staff and for the crew and for the people hanging around. And I overhear you saying that the guy shows up with fried bologna. Out of all the things that a gourmet chef could make and bring to the set of the taping of an Emeril show, he brings fried bologna. Now, what kind of crap is that?
It's not fried bologna. It's slow roasted. In
well, that makes all the difference in
hours.
The world.
Roasted
bologna.
Sugared glacé.
Roasted bologna. I would have taken that roasted bologna and said, here, take this home, feed it to the dog, and bring back some real food.
You know what? It was the best bologna you would ever have, JC.
No, these questions.
A big slice of French bread slathered in mustard with a cold beer. It's Super Bowl stuff. I mean, it's fantastic.
And now we are pleased to welcome Chef Emeril Lagasse. How you doing, Chef?
It's slow roasted and brown sugar and mustard, and it just sort of like oozes and pops, and you put that between some bread, and You kick it up a couple of notches. That's like that's not for like no closet bammers.
No
bammers.
No sissy baloney. Let's just explain what's going on here.
Baloney on my boat.
Karen and Brian are in the studio in St. Louis, and I'm sitting a couple of blocks away from you. At
I know where you are too. I'm at the. I'm bringing you some baloney right after this.
I can smell.
We're gonna settle this once and for all, JC.
I'm gonna tell Liz to open the window, and I can smell it coming down the street here. I'm a couple
Absolutely.
Of blocks. Couple of blocks away from me. Now, I got to tell you, years ago, a friend of mine, Mike Bush, who does the sports for Channel 5 here in St. Louis, had worked on the air in New Orleans, and he said, when you go to New Orleans, you got to go to Commander's Palace. And in fact, I went to Commander's Palace, and did they bring everybody through the kitchen on the way to their seat, to their table, or was that just me?
That's actually, you know, I started there in 1982. You know, I'll never forget my first time when I went through the kitchen with Ella Brennan, and it's like, wow. And I'm like, look at all these great smells, and it's kind of like my mom's kitchen. It smells so good in here. But that's it. You got to go through the kitchen to get to the bar, and then you kind of wait until you get to your table. And it was a great 7.5 years being there. And I left in late 89. Ella is still my dear friend, like my mom. And Commander's a wonderful restaurant. So New Orleans is just a great eating town.
Yeah, I had the bread pudding and everything, too, which was absolutely required as your dessert when you go there. All right, let's talk about...
I had some right now.
you got fried bologna. What do you need that for?
Exactly.
Let's talk about the show. We had Bob Urich on the air about 10 days ago or so. And it just sounds like you guys are having fun and just cooking and eating and just laughing and having a great time.
We're absolutely having a blast. If you kind of, you know, like trying to get a taste for the show, Emeril, on Tuesday nights on NBC at 8 o'clock, here it is. I mean, you probably remember Designing Women, Evening Shade Designing Women.
A couple of those gals look like they've been eating a lot of fried bologna.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of like 2002. I mean, it's this guy that's a chef and has a cooking show. He's surrounded by all these, like, brassy women. This, you know, just Lisa Ann Walter and Sherry Shepherd and Carrie Press. I mean, he's just surrounded. And then there goes Robert Urich. He's the agent, my friend, and he kind of comes in and tries to be a buffer because they always got to take it too far, you know? They just can't go and get regular fish. No, they got to go steal Martha Stewart's fish or something like that. You know what I mean? It's just always too far. And Robert Urich, and they run over him, too, and kick his butt. But we're having a great time. We're eating good, I can tell you that.
You know, on the Food Network, you had Emeril Live and Essence of Emeril, and you did some of that stuff. You had people sitting around. I mean, you had somewhat of an audience in that situation, but now you're doing situation comedy, you're delivering jokes, there's timing, you're working off a script. Had you ever done anything like this prior to the show that you got now?
No, I never did anything studio-wise like that and scripted-wise like that. I mean, you know, Emeril Live is, I create and have a great team. We've been working together. I basically go... you know, I have a 15-second dialogue, 20-second dialogue, and then only God knows where we're going, you know. But with this show here, it is scripted, and you know, it's about being surrounded by a great team who are having fun. They're all into food. They all cook. They all love to eat. You know, I've given a lot of cooking tips for a lot of acting tips, and we're having a good time. And now I'm sort of getting into the Emeril mode, and thank God, because they don't want anything but Emeril. They just want me. So it's like I'm trying to pretend to be somebody else or be somebody else. It's just being me, and it's very, very funny. You got to tune in.
All right, now, Emeril, you know, I'm sitting here in New York, and my partner's back in St. Louis. We're always making fun of Karen's cooking.
Uh-huh.
And then the sports guy, Brian McKenna, didn't even know that they sell cooked chickens at the supermarket. We just told him about that about 2 weeks ago. For people who don't really know their way around a kitchen particularly well, I mean,
Thank you, Emeril. Thank you.
You're working at such an accelerated level, but for somebody who is just really... Because you got to start somewhere before you can get to an accelerated level. So what advice would you give somebody who's just kind of like trying to set up a kitchen, trying to get going, and maybe trying to learn a little bit about cooking?
All right, you ready, JC?
Yeah.
Here we go. You got to have a stocked pantry, and don't, like, you know, it's not rocket science. You know, don't like try to like do too much. But people, they make the mistake, they don't have a food plan, and then they get some recipe, and then they don't read it. So they don't know what they're shopping for. Then when they get home, they don't know what they're supposed to cook. Relax. It's just, you know, it's just a recipe. It's just, you know, take it easy and don't complicate it. Don't overcomplicate it. And that's what I tell people. Then if you're way, way out there, like I just said to Karen, order out.
Yeah, forget it. Thank you.
What about equipment and utensils and stuff like that? What's absolutely necessarily required just to get started?
You got to have a good knife, and you got to at least have a good saute pan. You know,
in my case, a good fire extinguisher.
And a fire extinguisher might help.
And a stomach
Karen,
pump.
I'm coming to St. Louis really soon, Karen, and I'm coming by. Are you married?
Yes, I'm married. So are you, but that's
too.
Okay.
No, I am too, but I'm coming by. I'm giving you Emerald 101.
I love it.
I'm going to straighten you out so you can straighten these damn guys out.
Thank you.
And let me tell you something. You don't have to, like, build rocket ships to say, bam! Don't be a closet bammer. Come on out. Feel the love. That's what I say.
All right. You also have a new book. Is that correct?
Yeah, Primetime Emerald. Just out a couple of weeks ago. It's a collaboration of a lot of my favorite recipes and anecdotes and stories of, you know, the last year or so on television and things that I've done, you know, on Good Morning America or, you know, on the Leno Show. Just a lot of good memories, but really, really good food. And let me tell you, this is real stuff. This ain't no foo-foo stuff. This is like real stuff that you can cook at home.
See, that was a Freudian slip. You said lots of anecdotes. And I know you meant anecdotes, but in Karen's case, it probably is antidotes. But
that's right.
All right, so that's
glad to see. Hey, Karen, glad to see somebody's reading a Funkin' Wagnall this morning, aren't you?
Welcome to my nightmare.
Comes to New York. Now he's a smart guy. I know where you live, buddy.
Primetime Emerald, more TV dinners from America's favorite chef. That's the book published by William Morrow. And, of course, Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock Central Time on NBC with Robert Urich and Lisa Ann Walter, who is great in The Parent Trap.
She's awesome. She's such a talented actress.
Yeah, she's cool. All right.
Sherry Shepherd's great. Just tune in, okay? It doesn't matter if you're not home. Let your dog watch. Let your cat watch. Your parakeet. Please.
Let your parakeet watch the show. Thanks, Emerald. Good luck to you.
Bye, JC.
How much fun was he? All right, and that does it. Another JC Corcoran podcast here at jcontheline.com is in the can. We publish at 7 a.m. Central Time every weekday morning. Please spread the word. Tell your friends, especially the people who used to listen to the old radio shows, that we are here every weekday morning at 7. You can download and you can listen whenever you want. All right, we're back tomorrow morning. Enjoy your day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.